Okay, so good evening again, dear ones. So again, my name is Booker, and I am visiting California this week, and actually I'm here for a few weeks, and I'm subbing for Howie Cohen here at Mission Dharma in San Francisco. And I want to take a moment to say hello to our friends that are on Facebook Live, so welcome. And I want to start by just acknowledging that we are at the beginning of a new year, of a new decade. This is the second Tuesday of the month, and so we are just wrapping up the first week of 2020. So how's it going so far? It's good? See, I'm with you in the back. We're like, oh, I'm not quite sure about this 2020 situation. Exactly. But for some of us, it's going really great. It's for some of us, we're like, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what's going on. So I flew into California on Saturday. After living in New York for almost 20 years, I moved to Connecticut. So that's where I've been living there for about a year now. And so I flew in on Saturday, and I got to spend a few days with my mentor and teacher, Philip Moffitt. And we're just hanging out and doing a lot of walk and talks, and I've been going and sitting in on some of his talks. And he's really into this person from Greek mythology named Janus, who is the god of transitions, of passageways, of doorways, of gates, of endings, of transitions. Transitions around times, like moving from war into peace. And I'm assuming also he's the god of transitions as we move into a new year or to a new decade. And so he's usually depicted as having two full heads and faces facing away from each other. So here's one face and the other face is facing that direction. And so he's looking at the back as he's looking to the future. So looking where he just came from as well as looking towards the future. It reminds me of that old adage of before you know where you're going, you need to know where you've come from, right? It might come from him, I don't know. I'm making a leap, right? I'm making a leap there. So here we are at this crossroads of time, at the beginning of a new year, of a new decade. And for some of us, we might still be feeling the residue, the stickiness of 2019 as we're figuring out what we want this new year and this new decade to be, to look like for us. And we need time and space and breath to figure out what that looks like. We need that sacred pause. So for many of us, we have different ways that we end the new year. We say goodbye to one year and say hello to the next year. My girlfriend and I, for the past 3 years, had this ritual of taking an annual holiday Southern road trip. And so we drive in our, I have no idea what year it is, our very old Honda CR-V. And we pack it up and we drive from Connecticut, where we live, Bridgeport, Connecticut, and we drive all the way down to Jacksonville, Florida. And along the way, we stop and we visit friends and family in Philly and Virginia and North Carolina and Savannah, Georgia. And then we do the whole thing back up. So we take about 10 days to do this trip. And we always arrive home between like 6 and 9 p.m. on New Year's Eve. And we started this ritual on our very first year together of watching the classic 1989 romantic comedy, When Harry Met Sally. Thank you. If you don't know this movie, and I don't know how you would not know this movie, but it begun the genre of the rom-com, as we say in the business, of these romantic comedies. And it stars America's sweetheart, Meg Ryan, and Billy Crystal, and they meet after college, and they have this road trip from the Midwest to New York, and they kind of hate each other and they kind of keep meeting each other over. It doesn't matter. You've seen it. It's been on for 30 years. You know it when Harry Met Sally is, right? Okay. And so my favorite part of this movie is that the movie starts and has these little vignettes of old couples coming together and talking about how they met and how they fell in love. And it's really just the sweetest thing for me. And so when Harry Met Sally gives me this sacred pause that I need to end my year, it allows me to let go of the fullness of the year that I'm leaving behind, to let go of the expectations that have others have for me, and most importantly, to let go of the expectations that I have for myself. This annual end-of-year ritual allows me to laugh, to cry, and reminds me that everything is going to be okay in the end. So whatever your annual end-of-the-year ritual is, for all of us, it is time to pause, to reflect, to have introspection, to really reflect on what this past year has been and where we want to go. And most importantly, for most of us, hopefully it's a time for us to really rest, to really rest deeply. So for some of this, this time for us to pause can be a time of great joy, for us to reflect upon the year, all we've accomplished, the things that we've learned, the people we've met, the experiences that we had. For some of us, it's a really joyful, exciting thing to sit back and reflect. And for most of us, it can be a little stressful. It can be full of anxiety and doubt and fear and anguish and a lot of self-judgment about what we didn't get done this year. And if we're making New Year's resolutions, it's like, why am I doing that resolution again? I should have gotten it done by this point in my life. And so what's this thing that's been preventing us from moving forward? As I mentioned, I spent a few days with my teacher, Philip, and I went to hear him speak last night, and he offered these three reflections for folks to sit with and to be with. One of them was, what is it within me that needs to let go? What is it that needs to be cultivated? And what is it that needs to be accepted? And with each of these, there was a caveat, as best as I am able, right? So as best as I am able to the best of my ability. And I think that's really important when we talk about any aspect of our practice. And so after having us sit with these three questions and contemplating, and some people were sharing out, he asked, but what is your question? Because not all of those questions are going to resonate with all of us. So he asked us, what is your question? What is the one that you're really sitting with, that you're really resonating with? And for me, it was the question about what needs to let go, what I need to let go. I'm a greedy type, so I tend to cling and hang on to everything. And so, including like my righteousness. And so that's something that I would love to work on this year. And I realized for me that in having this question, this letting go can actually create space in my heart, my mind, and my body, so that this new attitude, this new way of holding criticism, this new way of holding myself tenderly when I'm having a really rough day, had space to be invited into. It's like in yoga practice, how we wait for the breath before the body moves. And so we wait for that inhalation to create this space in the body. And then with the exhalation, we can move deeper into the posture that we are working with. And so that's the way that I really hold renunciation, is creating space for us to breathe into, to deepen into. So a few weeks ago, I was invited to offer a keynote talk at a conference in Connecticut. It was for the Healing and Recovery Through Integrative Medicine conference. And there were about 400 people in the room. Most of them were medical professionals and therapists who were using the practices of yoga, meditation, qigong, acupuncture to support folks in their healing through recovery. And then there's about 100 people in the room that were folks who are actively in recovery who are the recipients of these practices. And after I gave my talk, these two young men came up to me, these really buff dudes. And one of them had shared with me that he had been sober for 7 years and that he had relapsed. And so he was trying sobriety again. But this time he was working with these practices of meditation. He said that the first time he went through sobriety, he thought that it was all about letting go of the drugs, of letting go of the alcohol, and then you would be fine. But what he found, and I'm sure a lot of us have had this experience, is that when we let go, that there's this hole, there's this void, there's this emptiness. And when we don't have something to fill the gap, it's so easy for us to relapse, whether it's on drugs or alcohol or any of these unskillful narratives or behaviors that have traveled around with us. And so I want to spend this evening speaking about renunciation. And not just renunciation, you know, this letting go, but also how the cultivation of wisdom and discernment can really thrive in this space. And we'll also touch upon the compassion in which we need to support us through this ongoing process. And so for many of us, we are starting this year with some sort of New Year's resolution or some sort of promise that we've made to ourselves about how we want to show up this year in our lives, professionally, romantically, to our partners, to our family, to our children, to our parents. So how are these resolutions going so far? Who's set a resolution? You don't have to tell me, but who's just set one? I'm curious. Okay, so not a lot of people, but a few of you, a handful of you. All right. And so, you know, the resolution, it's this intention that we set for ourselves. This intention is a mental thought that creates a commitment to carry out an action. And intention is also one of the Eightfold Path, known as Samma Sankappa. A few years ago, I was speaking to one of a young man that I mentor. And he was working with intention in his practice. And he had this sort of eureka moment. And he said, I'm finding my intention is like my home, the place I can come back and reside in, that's safe and larger than my small sense of I, that it nearly becomes synonymous with presence because it's the motivation that brings me back. It's not a narrow goal that I can judge myself for not meeting. It's a larger identity that I can live inside. I really love the idea of living inside intention. There's something that's, there's this like deep physicality about it. There's this, it feels really active and alive, like I'm living inside my intention. Like I'm not letting it hang out to the side, like I'm actively engaged with it. So we create these intentions, we write them down, we speak them out loud so that they are known. And once they are known, once people have heard them, we can't take them back. They can't be unknown for us. And it reminds me of a line from the Sangha River by Thich Nhat Hanh. He says that we begin to learn how to look with Sangha eyes, how to walk with Sangha feet, and how to feel with a Sangha heart. We begin to think, move, act, and feel not just for our own gain, but for the welfare of all beings. The Buddha explains that right or skillful intention is threefold. The first is intention. The intention of renunciation. The second is the intention of goodwill. And then the third is the intention of harmlessness. And so, of course, these lead to the eradication of their opposites, which are greed, ill will, and causing harm. And so tonight, I'm going to focus on the first tenet of intention, and again, that is the intention of renunciation. Historically, when I thought of renunciation, I always thought about people making these New Year's resolutions, and this year, it's all the things that they weren't going to do. And not because these things created illness or disease in their body, but they were just like, these are things that they were really indulging in and they wanted to just get out of their lives. And so I would always hear people saying things like, I'm getting rid of, chocolate and gluten and sugar and alcohol, and I'm not gonna binge on Netflix anymore, right? And so all these things that, and we could definitely benefit from loosening our grip on all of these things, right? Don't get me wrong on that. But when we have this strong, I'm getting rid of these things, I'm renunciating them, they're out of my life, those things become the enemy. And renunciation becomes a bad word. And we kind of move into this rigid asceticism. Completely void of joy. So it becomes sort of harmful to our bodies and our systems. And these types of renunciations don't tend to last very long because they're not fun. They're not joyful. And who wants to live like that? So over the past few years in my practice, I began to hold renunciation not as all the things I can't have, but rather as gateways to these portals that support wisdom and compassion. Renunciation gives me the opportunity to uncover what is actually available to me when I let go of a heart and a mind that clings and grasps. It gives me the ability to pause and to consider what I gain through letting go of unskillful actions, and what might impact not only my own heart and mind, but this person sitting in front of me, in this community, in this city, in this world as a whole. I think often of the version of the precepts that I've been working with. Instead of saying, I undertake the precept to refrain from killing, I now say, knowing how deeply our lives intertwine, I take the vow to protect life. And instead of not just consuming alcohol and drugs, I consider all of the intoxicants that cloud my heart and mind, including social media, news media, and buying into the narrative that Hollywood and politicians have made about people who look like me. I renounce that. So there is wisdom, discernment, not repression and deprivation and renunciation. There's a sense of freedom and joy and liberation. So renunciation is also one of the 10 paramis, or one of the 10 perfections. And these are a compilation or a collection these other pathways that support us in living a more liberated and free life. So outside of renunciation, the other nine are generosity, virtue, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, resolve, benevolence, and equanimity. Ajahn Sucitto suggests that renunciation takes the mind to a more stable place, where it can gain access to great ease and clarity. So like every other parami, renunciation supports and depends on wisdom. And renunciation is counterculture, right? It goes against everything we've learned about the power in having, collecting, gaining, grasping, holding, owning. Even spiritual practice gets caught up in this capitalist view. And so we've all had times when our practice, we begin to hold really tightly onto our practice, right? If I could just get to the third jhana, then I'd be happy. If I could just forgive that person who's harmed me, then I could be liberated and free. So we hold on so tightly to our practice that it actually slips us back into that place of not believing that fundamentally we can find freedom. It brings us back into this this hole of believing that we are fundamentally lacking and without the skill. So there's this poem that I love called She Let Go. This is by Sapphire Rose. She let go. Without a thought or a word, she let go. She let go of the fear, she let go of the judgments. She let go of the confluence of opinions swarming around her head. She let go of the committee of indecision within her. She let go of all the right reasons. Wholly and completely, without hesitation or worry, she just let go. She didn't ask anyone for advice. She didn't read a book on how to let go. She didn't search the scriptures. She just let go. She let go of all the memories that held her back. She let go of all of the anxiety that kept her from moving forward. She let go of the planning and all of the calculations about how to do it just right. She didn't promise to let go. She didn't journal about it. She didn't write the projected date in her day timer. She made no public announcement and put no ad in the paper. She didn't check the weather report or read her daily horoscope. She just let go. She didn't analyze whether she should let go. She didn't call her friends to discuss the matter. She didn't do a five-step spiritual mind treatment. She didn't call the prayer line. She didn't utter one word. She just let go. No one was around when it happened. There was no applause or congratulations. No one thanked her or praised her. No one noticed a thing. Like a leaf falling from a tree, she just let go. There was no effort. There was no struggle. It wasn't good and it wasn't bad. It was what it was, and it is just that. In the space of letting go, she let it all be. A small smile came over her face. A light breeze blew through her hair, and the sun and the moon shone forevermore. And so I love that poem because it speaks to the ease in which we can let go. It doesn't have to be this huge to-do. We don't have to get stuck on the narrative of our lives, the story that we've always told ourselves, or the experiences we've lived through. We can just let go. And we can do it on our own time, in our own way. And only we have to know that we've let go. For many years, I worked in jails in New York City. I worked with vulnerable populations in general, but specifically my heart was in working with incarcerated system-involved youth, and I worked in jails for over 10 years. And I remember one of my young girls was talking about her practice. And she had, you know, gotten pretty far in her practice, but as I was thinking about this story earlier, I also thought about the young kids and the first time they would come to practice, and I would hold a little singing bowl like this when that fit into my hand. And I'd always ring the bell, and a new person, I'd say, "Do you want to ring the bell?" And they would hold it in their hand. They would inevitably hold on really tightly and hit it. If you've ever held a singing bowl really tightly in your hand and just hit it, it makes this very like thunk sound, like that's what it does. And so such a beautiful way to introduce them into the practice and to teach them that you have to let go. You have to open up your hands so that the bell can sing, so that it can be free and liberated. And so one of my young girls who had been practicing with me for a while was saying that there's a lot going on in her mind. She was 13 years old. She had a child at home. She was locked up in jail. There's a lot going on in her life, right? And she said that sometimes her mind felt like this, like this really tight-knit thing that she couldn't get through. And through her meditation practice, she began to find some space in between. And she said, everything is still there. All the things that I worry about, that I stress about, I'm still locked up, but I'm liberated because I can now see all the things that need to be tended to. So there is clarity, there was wisdom in her practice that allowed her to see things right-sized and to be able to move into her practice. And even though it allowed her to let go of that narrative, so that second, third, fourth error that would hit, she was able to see what was true and to tend to her practice. So, what do we gain by letting go? And this practice, I just want to mention, is one of, it's a reflective practice. It's one that we sit with, that we explore, that we play with, that we move at the speed of trust. We don't just let go of everything at one time. We cultivate discernment and clarity and wisdom so that we do it in a way that supports us, that allows us to move with grace and ease and deep care for our practice. We get to let go of greed, aversion, and most importantly, delusion that has been blocking our hearts and minds. And from this opening, we can begin to bring in these practices, these attitudes, these values that we can bring into our lives. When we create the space by letting go, we now have space to move into and to live a life that we truly want to live. I can abide in compassion and understanding and clear knowing. I can liberate myself from the intoxication of a mind that fears, that doubts, that prevents me from loving deeply. And yes, there is a vulnerability. There's a delicateness, there's a tenderness in this letting go. And so we again drop into this deep knowing of the body. We cultivate the sense of intimacy, of deep knowing, of our intuition that lets us know when it's time to titrate, moving towards this freedom, moving towards this letting go. And when it's come back, and to seek quietness and stillness in our minds and our hearts and our bodies. In a really beautiful poem that expresses that as Keeping Quiet by Pablo Neruda. He was a Chilean politician and poet. And he writes, "Now we will count to 12, and we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would look at his hurt hands. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it's about. I want no truck with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving, and for once we could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt the sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us as when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive. Now I'll count up to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go." So, thank you for your kind attention and listening to my exploration, my playing, my experimenting with renunciation, with dropping into this cultivation of wisdom. And with remembering that this clarity doesn't come without the stillness, without the quietness. And so we have just about a couple of minutes left. And I'd like to open up to see if there's any questions or thoughts, any explorations that folks are working with. My friend Bonnie Duran often speaks about this period of wisdom democracy. And so a time for us to share our wisdom or what we're thinking about, what we're curious about, what we're working with. So does anyone want to share anything that's alive for them right now as we close out the first week of 2020?
I've been working a lot with how community works, and when you said moving at the speed of trust, that really struck me, and I'm just curious if you have any elaboration on that. Elaboration on what you mean by this moving at the speed of trust, because very curious.
Yeah. Moving at the speed of trust is something, a phrase that I picked up from being in activist spaces and by reading Emergent Strategies, which is a really amazing book. And it really speaks to moving at the pace that's right for us, only going as deep with anything in our lives as we feel comfortable. And I think for so many of us, we have this feeling of, I should be there. I should be over this trauma. I should be at this place of forgiveness with this person who's harmed me. I should have been able to forgive you at this point. I should, you know, and we keep shoulding ourselves, right? And when we move ourselves faster than what the body, the psyche, the emotional body is ready to move, we actually create a lot more harm, and it sets us back even further. And so this applies even into our meditation practice. Right? So when we're sitting and there's something that is just pervasive in our practice, it's not about plowing through and getting in there and really excavating. Sometimes that can be useful, and sometimes that's a cue to pause, to sit back, to drop back down to the felt sense of the body, of the breath, to feel the sense of rest. And then we titrate back towards and see if we've cultivated a little bit more space to be with whatever that thing is. And so we move at the speed of trust. And of all the things I spoke tonight, if I'm so happy that's what you yanked out of it, and that's kind of like what I hope that we all got from working with renunciation, that it's a vulnerable, delicate, tender exploration and practice. And so we must continue to move at the speed of trust.
All right.
And so, dear ones, my friends at Mission Dharma in San Francisco and our friends watching on Facebook Live, thank you so much for being here this evening and practicing with us and starting off 2020 with the intention to deepen and to cultivate your practice. And so we'll take a moment to dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings go to bed this evening with a full belly. May all beings have a safe and warm place to rest their heads. May all beings be safe from internal and external pain and suffering. And may all beings be liberated and free. Thank you so much for your practice. Be safe getting home this evening.